Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Michael Wald, and thank you again for tuning in to Ask the Blood Detective. I have been nicknamed the Blood Detective for looking very deeply into the unique needs of my patients through my Blood Detective computer technology, which can interpret a large amount of laboratory and assessment tests so that I can customize my recommendations for each person. Now, today we are in part five of my series, Autism Epidemic, within which I've been discussing autism and autism spectrum disorders, and they have some fundamental things in common, including some core symptoms like impaired social interactions, stereotypical repetitive behaviors, and communication defects, and that's part of the whole definition. And my other shows speak about this in more detail, as those of you who have been listening know. And for those that have not, you can listen to all of those radio shows on my website at www.intmedny.com, or just Google to find me, Dr. Michael Wald, or The Blood Detective, and you can locate those shows and read the blogs as well if reading is better than listening. And they're all fairly short segments, between around 13 to 15 minutes. None of them are longer than 15 minutes. So again, this is part five of perhaps a part seven or eight series, and I've been talking about the different potential causes of ASDs, and many of these causes interact. You know, one cannot be exposed to an environmental toxin like a metal that can disrupt brain chemistry without it affecting nutritional needs. So the list goes on and on of the interactions, which I'll explore during today's show and the remaining shows. So let me continue my discussion today with nutritional causes or nutritional complications of ASDs or autism spectrum disorders. And most of us think in terms of nutritional deficiencies. And of course, any nutritional deficiencies that I find in my patients, I correct. But often, it's not about just deficiencies. It's about these children not having optimal levels of things. For example, the normal blood range of vitamin D is between 30 and 100 units. And in traditional medicine, if you've got a 31, you're normal. But we know that the higher normal, the vitamin D level, the lower one's overall risk of morbidity and mortality. That means dying of anything. And the higher vitamin D, the greater the quality of life. And the reverse is true. The lower one's vitamin D level, one will see an increased morbidity and mortality. That's just one example of a biomarker. That means a test that we fix now that means something now, but also predicts lots of stuff for the future. So I measure 50, 60, 70 biomarkers on each patient because we want them all trending towards optimal, not just acceptable. I want the vitamin D levels at 70 to 75 units. That's what I want. And just because you take vitamin D3 doesn't mean it gets in. Many people come to me and say, yes, I asked my doctor to measure the vitamin D, or they measured it and they said it was low and they told me, take some vitamin D or take some vitamin C if that's what they were talking about. This is not specific enough. I personally must know when I give a patient nutrients, are they getting absorbed? Are they being used? And in the case of ASDs, are those nutrients that need to be activated? Is that happening? B12, folic acid must be methylated in the body. Taking any B12 doesn't mean it's going to be used. So, in summary, we all want to identify any nutritional deficiencies in people with ASD because these kids have a lot of them. They have deficiencies, they have some dangerous excesses, they have some imbalances. And, you know, I look at the physical symptoms of these children because they can tell you a lot about nutrition. Do they have dandruff, which is an essential fatty acid problem? It could be another problem, but this is a true example. Do they have bumps on their skin, the back of their arms? That could be vitamin A, vitamin D. That also could be omega-3 fatty acid deficiencies, protein deficiencies. You can see a lot from looking at a person. I did a show on ABC World News Tonight with Diane Sawyer all about visual clues of disease. You can watch that video on my website. And I get out and look at questionnaires. We have to look at all the social issues involved and what I call a blood detective laboratory investigation, which is a very, very detailed investigation that I do, where I look at basically most body systems to create what I call a metabolic map of each child that I see. Because all of this data allows me to minimize the recommendations, make them much more specific. So let's talk about some of the ways of managing not just these nutritional deficiencies, but imbalances. And I want to talk first, though, just to summarize some of the medical treatments that are available before I get into the natural ones. So for ASDs, medication is certainly a major consideration in the traditional, you know, allopathic world. But there are no agreed upon drug therapies for ASDs. So they're all termed off-label suggestions, meaning that these medications were approved for use in other diseases other than ASDs. So they're used in an off-label fashion, which means who knows what the heck they're going to do in the future. My personal experience with many patients is they've told me, yes, we tried these medications. We weren't sure if they worked. When we took my child off them, she or he did much better. I'm not saying never do medications with your children, but that's just not all there is. And then, you know, depending upon the medical specialist that the child with an ASD will visit, any variety of medications, often with no studies, as I've said, of their interactions, are routinely prescribed. And these all for, you know, and then more medications for the other types of health issues, like the gastrointestinal problems, which are very, very prevalent among those with ASDs, the seizure issues that may be there. A lot of the seizures are very minimum, and they're not even diagnosed. A lot of parents that I see, they are not aware that their children have seizures until we find that out for them. There's sleep disorders, and traditional medicine just throws medications at these things. We need more, and we have more. But medicine also has sensory-based treatments and behavioral treatments and family behavioral therapies where they develop, you know, social skills with the children and in their interactions at home and out of the home. And this is all very, very important. It's just incomplete, in my opinion. So let's speak about some of the natural treatments known as the complementary or alternative medicine treatments. And many of you know them because they're being used by over 80% of those people out there, according to surveys, of parents who have children with ASDs. It's just that I find that at least, well, almost that many use them just wrong. Without careful testing, if one sees a practitioner that is natural, yes, that's great, but is really not sophisticated in the area of biochemistry to figure this out, then we have a lot of wasted time and effort, and sometimes harm. Let me talk about some of the diets that are known to be of use. But I develop a food plan that is doable for children, which may be a combination of some of the things I'm going to discuss now. So I never pigeonhole a child into just this is the best diet or that is the best diet. But one consideration is the ketogenic diet. And this is a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet that's previously been used for the treatment of intractable epilepsy. And it's also known to improve something called mitochondrial function, which is depressed in most of the ASDs. So mitochondrial function is an energy process in cells. I'm not just talking about perceived energy, but energy in cells to do work. Depressed mitochondrial function generally is associated with brain dysfunction and disease of all types, and human aging, by the way. But the traditional ketogenic diet may help intractable seizures, but increase the risk of dying of other diseases like heart disease and stroke. So I develop a ketogenic, sort of a natural ketogenic diet where I use nutritional agents and healthier fat foods, and I measure blood and urine levels of ketones to know and identify the level of the ketones produced in the body from the ketogenic diet. See, the brain uses glucose as its main energy source. But when you switch it with a high ketogenic diet, so the ketones are the energy source, a lot of symptoms and a lot of these kids do get better. Again, that's not the only thing. I'm not even sure it works on most of my patients, but it is a consideration. Now, when you combine it with some of these other dietary considerations I'll speak about now, you get the most potential to help. But just to finish off the ketogenic diet, that could definitely benefit individuals, children, both boys and girls, with ASD affected with epileptic episodes for sure, as well as those with either mild respiratory complex deficiencies and all other complicated problems. So there's a lot of conditions that could benefit from a ketogenic approach. There was a study that showed, a number of studies actually, that the ketogenic diet was able to modify social behaviors in children. And that was a study in developmental neuroscience. And that's a big deal. And why isn't that done by every pediatric neurologist? I just don't know. Well, because they don't get trained in nutrition. That's why. That's important. And now let's talk about food allergies. Well, you know, I think of autism and ASDs like a brain allergy. I really do, because you have all of these symptoms that seem to be very similar in allergy in the body, inflammation, which also you see in autism and ASDs. You know, when there's a food allergy, there's an activation in the body of what are called mast cells, and these are immune cells, and they are found in very large amounts in an area of the brain called the hypothalamus. Now, the hypothalamus is the part of the brain that controls behavior and language. What a coincidence that mast cells, increased by food allergies, are found in large measure in the area of the brain that controls behavior and language, the very same thing we see in ASDs. But, of course, the allergist doesn't know anything about the nervous system in medicine, and the neurologist does not know anything about allergies, and those two practitioners don't talk to the gastroenterologist, to the endocrinologist, to the toxicologist. Do you see? An integrated holistic approach is the only one that makes sense. And what we see is allergies affect the hypothalamic release of a very important hormone known as corticotropin releasing hormone that's secreted by the hypothalamus, as I said, along with another hormone called neurotropin, which those hormones are needed to promote brain function and healing. And we find that this is a problem in ASDs. So yes, I think there's allergens. But you have to remember, if you just check allergy testing, folks, listen up. If you just check allergy testing on these kids without first testing for inflammation, which can cause false or wrong allergy tests, you're wasting your time. All I see that happens is parents, well-meaning parents, put their kids on highly restrictive diets at the advice of very well-intentioned, very intelligent healthcare providers who do not know about the intricacies of these tests. And they create a lot of other nutritional problems in these kids and can make them worse in the long term. So there's an order of sort of operations when you approach these children and do these different tests. There's, of course, the gluten-free diet approach. You know, glutens can cause the formation of chemicals in the brain called gluteomorphins, which are morphine-like molecules, which can create a lot of these symptoms that you see in ASDs. But most allopathic physicians, like allergists, they will only suggest gluten elimination if the IgE skin tests show positive. But I'm telling you now, if I had a nickel for every child that I had whose symptoms improved when I eliminated gluten and then accounted for the protein defect from eliminating the gluten, because gluten is a very important source of protein, and the other nutritional issues, I'd be retired. So I don't rely on the tests entirely. I use my common sense, and sometimes that actually works. Some kids respond to dairy-free diets. Others may respond to GMO-free diets, genetically modified foods. I mean, one could say that we've had an increased incidence of ASDs over the last 10 years, and that has been since the introduction of ASDs as well. Of GMOs. For those of you interested in more about genetically modified foods, you can read my book called Frankenfoods, Controversies, Lies, and Your Health, available on Amazon, or you can read excerpts on my Blood Detective website. So I'm going to end today, and we're going to take this discussion to a new level, continuing with the specifics, the practical nutrients, and how to consider them in the next one or two shows. So this has been a pleasure. My name is Dr. Michael Wall, the Blood Detective, and please call me. Let me know your comments and show suggestions for upcoming shows after this series at 914-242-8844, or go to my website at www.blooddetective.com or intmednyy.com, and have a wonderful